also local artist and horror movie aficionado Kelly Doran is going to join the conversation.
Okay. I guess I should write these names down. So yeah. Kelly, and what was the other name?
Kelly is our horror film buff, and Lauren is our announcer.
Lauren or Oren?
Oh, Lauren with an L.
Okay, Lauren. Okay,
it's spelled L-O-R-E-N.
You got it.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm kind of like the Ed McMahon of the show.
What's that? Yeah,
I don't know why, but the audio on my phone is really low. I'm trying to figure out how to make it. I got the volume all the way up, but it's like it's still kind of quiet.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're catching you loud and clear, and I'm looking on the recording here, and we've got good levels, I think, right, for you. If you wouldn't mind just, count to five or something.
Yeah. Hang on a second. I'm going to plug
in
you're fine. my earbud and see if I can hear you guys better, because it is really low. Hold on a second, okay?
All right.
I got to be very careful not to move. This is
Oh, yeah. That's much better. Are you guys there?
Yep. Yeah, we're here.
We're still here.
So,
okay, great.
This is, why don't we just say this? I think Dana Gould always says, this is the sound of my voice. So this is Judd talking. Lauren, why don't you just give him so he knows what your voice sounds like.
And now, live from the 1440 KVON studios at Broadcast Park.
All right, that's Lauren and then Kelly.
Wow, that sounds great, man. That sounds amazing.
Hi, Norman. How are you?
Good. How you doing, man?
Pretty good.
That's Kelly. So what we'll do is, oh.
What?
Oh,
hello?
No, I said, how's it going?
Oh, good.
Okay. What we're going to do is, since we're pre-recording, I'm not going to go through all the fanfare of playing the theme song or anything like that. We'll just, plug that in later, and we will just start the show with Lauren introducing the show. Then he and I will have a very brief banter, and then we'll be right to it. And the theme of the show is basically getting to know you, Norman, who you are, and what you do, and just appreciating and creating movie monsters. It's it's Halloween month, and I'm trying to do every episode as Halloween-y as possible.
Sounds awesome.
It's my favorite holiday. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Sadly, we did not have a Halloween show last year because of the fires here in Northern California.
Oh, what a drag, man!
It was.
We're making up for it now.
Yep. A year later.
All right. So. And it's a casual show, so, feel free. If I'm not asking you things you want to talk about, feel free to just start talking about them,
Just randomly talk about it.
You
put my car in to get fixed. And
yeah, that interesting stuff. The meatloaf recipe you just found that you're looking forward to trying out. You're a performer, and you know how this stuff works.
Yeah. I've definitely done this a few times.
Yeah, you're media savvy.
Awesome.
And you've got like the phantom spectral dog, barking, so that's good.
Yeah, atmosphere. I'm gonna actually go into the other room so you don't hear the dog barking.
Okay.
It's like on Kevin Smith's podcast where like he'll be talking with his co-host Scott Mosier and then the dog will start barking and he'll be just like, Shecky, shut up.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So should we do a show? Let me catch the time right now. It is on our recording, coming up on 4 minutes. This has been running, so that gives me an idea. Excuse me. All right. Give it a little blank air, and then I'll cue you, Lauren, all right?
Sure. So when is this episode going to air?
A week from Tuesday.
Oh, okay. A week from Tuesday. So which would be?
The 16th, I believe.
16th.
Yeah. Are you going to figure that into your intro, or? Maybe not.
Okay.
Just so you know when it. Okay.
The end of the summer is not the end of the world. Here's to October. And now, live from the 1440 KVON studios at Broadcast Park in the beautiful Napa Valley, it's Judd's Napa Valley Show. I'm Lauren Mole, and here's your host, Judd Finkelstein.
Hello there, Mr. Lauren Mole. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Judd. Top of the day.
Top of the day. What's going on in the world of Lauren? Always something exciting with you.
That's right. Well, I recently did a special event at Napa Valley College with none other than Artie Party himself.
Oh, you did? Artie. Orale.
Yeah, we were honored to be co-MCs for the annual Breakfast with the Mayor's event at Napa Valley College. But this is the first year back because it did not happen last year due to the fires.
Yeah, the mayor was busy. A little too busy to be having breakfast at the moment.
Well, she could have been.
Well, I think she was. By the way, what was for breakfast?
Oh, a lot of things. Let's see. There was a sausage. There was some French toast, some orange juice, some coffee. Name it.
How did I miss that? That sounds fabulous. That's great. You know, we're towards the end of sports season, which to me, I'm not the biggest sports fan, but I get excited for you because you are often singing the national anthem or take me out to the ball game at these major league sporting events. And baseball, we're wrapping it up. Any big like Coliseum type gigs coming up for you?
Maybe sometime next year when we'll finally be starting to sing the Star Spangled Banner. The Everybody is a Star organization based in Sonoma, that is, which I'm also with.
Yeah.
We're going to be start singing for the San Jose Sharks and the Sacramento Kings.
That's right. It'll be your first hockey game.
And my first Kings game, too.
Oh, you haven't done that. Oh, you did Warriors before.
Only Warriors, but never Kings. But okay. Soon, another sports drought for me will finally end.
Wow, I get to punch that card. Hey, why don't you once again tell everybody what Everybody is a Star organization is?
Well, Everybody's a Star is a nonprofit organization based in Sonoma that helps special needs individuals like myself showcase our talents in professionally made broadcast quality music videos.
And it's really wonderful. I would encourage all our listeners after the show, go online and look up everybodystar.org, which is a website that runs how often, Lauren?
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
It's incredible how often that is just available. Yes.
But also 366 in case of leap year.
That's coming up. Yes. And check out the video that features Lauren Mole looking ever so dashing in your white kind of tuxedo jacket in locations all over Northern California, singing the hit song, I Just Don't Know What We're All About Yet.
Judd, it's I Just Haven't Met You Yet by Michael Bublé of Canada.
Well, what did I say?
Well, you said something else.
Oh, okay. Well, now, thanks for setting the record straight. Hey, don't even ask me what I'm up to, because it's the usual. We're in the midst of harvest. It's October.
No, I'm not going to ask you that today.
No, I close my eyes, and sometimes, you know, this time of year, people see ghosts, goblins, and witches and weirdos, and I see grapes. That's about all I see when I close my eyes. So I'm not going to talk about it. We have a couple of fabulous guests. Actually, I'm just going to say right now who's in studio. This is last week's guest. Did such a great job talking about horror films. The guy's an encyclopedia. I asked him to come back and be my co-host. I've elevated him. I'm going to allow you to ask questions of our guest as well. It's Kelly Doran. Thanks for coming back.
Hi, everybody.
Local artist and horror film aficionado. Kelly, thanks for coming back.
No problem.
And Lauren, would you please do the honors of introducing our guest?
Tonight, we dine on something more sinister than your standard pub fare. It be tales of monsters.
Pub fare. Oh, like you'd eat at a pub. I got you. Sorry. Pub fare. Start again. I'm sorry. Yeah. We'll fix this in post.
Tonight, we dine on something more sinister than your standard pub fare. It be tales of monsters. So stay tuned to grub. Dare ya. We'll give all due respects to cinema's special effects with a master of makeup, Norman Cabrera.
Hey, Norman Cabrera's on the phone.
Awesome. Woo!
Yeah, man. Joining us all the way from Hollywood, California. Thanks for calling in.
That was awesome.
Oh, you've just been Lauren Mole, man. That's the signature move right there.
I've been mauled.
Yeah, you've been Lauren Mole mauled. Norman, before we get into, you know, why you are here, I will just say you are one of the big deals down in Hollywood when it comes to special effects, makeup, monster creation, masks, that type of stuff. And I think I've just lost something. So Kelly, we're going to have to fix something in post because I just lost my headphones, whatever you just did over there.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. Okay, now I can hear just perfectly. Okay. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
Bob, That's our editor, by the way, Norman. When you hear this part, could you scratch that?
Take two.
Bob will figure something else. He'll put like a werewolf howling or something in there.
Yeah.
So, Norman, we should talk before we get into all this. Just briefly, we'll bring the audience up to speed. I was trying to figure it out. I'm trying to remember when we first met, because I've known you a long time. It has been like either the late 90s or right around the year 2000, I think, we first became acquainted. And it wasn't through my love of old monster movies. In fact, I didn't know that you were involved in it. I don't think you knew that I had this appreciation. But it was through music down in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's like I was playing one in one of the many bands, you know, that I've done over the years. I can't remember which one. It was probably like the band that I did with Benny, you know, I'm guessing, you know.
It was I knew you from I knew you from the Ghastly Ones, which folks check out. And you know, if it's cool with you, Norman, at the end of this show, let's play one of your tracks. We'll just pop it on as extra podcast content, and you can let me know what you'd like to hear. But cool. The Ghastly Ones was a band that you are they still happening at all? Are you kind of on break?
No, the Ghastly Ones are 6 feet under right now. You know?
Okay.
I mean, the band thing is something that, you know, since I started in effects makeup and stuff like that, I always bumped into people through work, you know, people in shops or whatever. You know, that also played music. Like, you'd be surprised that a lot of the people who I've met and I've worked with through special effects makeup, you know, also play guitar or some kind of instrument, you know. So, like, I've always had a band in one way or the other. So, to make a long story short, the Ghastly Ones started because me and Garrett Emmel, you know, who's a makeup artist and a special effects creature guy as well,
yeah.
We were working together on some movies, and then at K&B, you know, I think we were working on Spawn and Dust Till Dawn and a few movies from the early 90s, and so we just started talking about music, and you know, we shared a really strong common interest in music. I mean, we loved like classic metal, you know, like hard rock and AC/DC and all that kind of stuff, but we also were really into surf and garage, like 60s garage, you know, so like,
which was my thing. I think that's how I became aware of you, is because of my love of surf and kind of 60s mm-hmm. garage as well, and you were on that circuit. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we were working on Spawn. I think it was either Spawn or it was From Dusk Till Dawn, like we were sitting across from each other at this shop called K&B. He's still working at K&B, and I've worked with K&B on and off for, you know, decades now, you know, but we were just talking music.
And K&B, that's an effects group. That's a workshop, and yeah, you guys do special effects for all kinds of movies.
K&B is Kurtzman Nicotero, stands for Kurtzman Nicotero and Berger, and it's not a law, it sounds like a law firm, but they actually make monster effects, creature effects there. So, like, so Garrett and I were, you know, literally working on the same movie, and just talking music and you know, I guess it was right around 93 or something like that, 94 maybe. And we're like, hey, we you know, we're both into this stuff. You know, he had all the Back from the Grave and all those garage comps and the Surf Creature and all that kind of stuff, you know, and so we just had a strong mutual interest in music, you know, and like, you know, there was a local kind of surf music scene happening, and we were like, hey, you know, let's get together and play music, and then one thing, you know, went to another, and suddenly we were playing in a band together, you know. So, but the band's always been a peripheral thing. So to get back to your question about the Ghastly Ones, like, you know, we just, that's something we did for fun that actually went way further than we ever expected.
That was incredible. You know? Well, I wasn't surprised. You know? You're all great musicians, and you were on drums in that one, and you had this Undertaker vibe. It was like a horror monster movie surf band, and you used
great.
Kelly knows what I'm talking about, and you know you have a video that involved Holland Hearse.
Yeah,
is a great video. Yeah, folks can see on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. Yeah, you can see the Holland Hearse video on YouTube and all that stuff. And yeah, you know, it's funny, one of those things that just happened. Like, we didn't have any major grand plans for
you know, being a, you know, on MTV or anything. You know, it was just something that we did for fun to play, like, in local clubs. And there was locally and also kind of around, there was a lot of bands kind of doing the retro thing, you know, sort of Phantom Surfers and you know, Satan's Pilgrims,
yeah,
and the 5678s and all stuff. So we kind of fell into this niche and stuff. And since we like this music and we like horror movies, so we blended horror movies and surf guitar, which surf guitar has kind of like a spooky sound.
Oh, yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So we, you know, it's one of the things that, like, it was so, it just kind of fell together. There wasn't a hell of a lot of premeditation to it, you know? It just sort of happened. We started doing it, and there was a local band called the Bomboras that we really liked, and we're like, hey, let's book a show with the Bomboras, and we'll play some shows. And it was literally that simple, you know. And I had done bands before, but never a surf band.
And the two of the two bands then end up on Rob Zombie's record label.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Rob connection happened through doing effects. You know, like I was doing effects for the Rob Zombie. Actually, before Rob went solo, I did all the effects for White Zombie, his band, before he went solo. And then I built all the stage props and his costumes and came out on stage in monster outfits and all that kind of stuff. So all that White Zombie stuff you see in the music video, like More Human Than Human and Electric Head and all that kind of stuff, that's all the stuff I made. If you see any kind of props or creatures or monsters or mutants or whatever, that's all, you know, stuff that I had done for Rob, you know. And then, you know, I was just starting up the Ghastly Ones with Garrett, and I was like, hey, here's a tape of a cassette tape of our band, you know, you want to hear it, you know, it's like surf, you know. And he's like, you know, Rob was in the 60s stuff, so he's like, oh, cool, man, let me listen to it. So he liked it, and then he was like, hey, let me put out a record for you guys, you know, as a sub label.
Just like that.
Yep. It was literally that simple. It was like, I want to put out your guys' record. You know, he came to a show, and we were playing Al's Bar, and you know, and he came and saw us play, and he was like, oh, this is cool. It reminds me of, you know, early punk rock, you know, like where there's like, you know, 20 people at the show, you know, and like, you know, but everyone's having a blast, you know. So it wasn't like a money making. Nobody was looking, seeing dollar signs or any of that kind of junk, you know. Right. It was all like, just have fun, you know, like,
yeah, I don't know about the bomb or about the Ghastly Ones, but I did hear from a buddy of mine who was in the Israeli military back in the early 90s, who said that the Bomboras, which album would that have been? That would have been, which one was on the...
No idea.
Well, whatever one. That those were given to the Air Force, I guess, Israeli Air Force to...
Oh, that's weird.
To get them psyched up, I guess. So
they should have given them Slayer or something.
Yeah, I don't know, but at least that was a good government contract. They got to sell some records. Yeah,
or Ministry, or, you know, or CD Puppy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, my claim to fame with your bands, I've got a couple, so I'm going to just get these out, and then we're going to just talk about you and Monsters and stuff. So you're another one of your bands that you were playing drums was The Mighty Kegsmen.
And
you guys were like the Animal House Fraternity Party.
No one's ever heard of that band, and we never recorded anything.
You know what? It's all recorded in my memory because you guys drove out to Palm Springs and played at my 30th birthday, which we had at this tiki resort out in Palm Springs. And you guys set up out on the lawn.
Yeah.
And it was a blast, and everyone had a blast. Everyone had several blasts. In fact, it was nuts.
Well, that was fun. I like being. I've always been into like the tiki scene and all that kind of like stuff, and you know, and that band really fit really well with that scene. And the tiki scene is still really huge. You know?
Oh yeah, like, it's gotten bigger and bigger.
And it has a, you know, it draws like a retro vibe. You know, the bands and music and stuff like that. So it's fun. You know, like. You know, I do this other band occasionally called Boss Fink, too.
Oh,
and it's also kind of instrumental hot rod, you know, stuff. And we have a record. I put out a record, too, you know, through Double Crown. You can pick that one up, too, since we're plugging all my bands.
No, but let's do it.
Boss Fink is on Double Crown, you know, and it's surf and hot rod, you know, music, like what you'd hear at the drag strip in 1963, you know. And it's sort of like, you know, or 65 or whatever. But, you know, it's just stuff we do for fun, you know. I love playing music. And like I said, I've always played in a band in one way or the other with other effects guys or other people that I know. So, you know, it's kind of it's a cool release outside of, you know, working on movies, which, you know, is a blast in its own way and stuff. But you also like to have other, I like to have other outlets as well, and music is one of them.
Yeah, well, Boss Fink, man, you're multi-instrumentalist because you play lead guitar on that, and it, and you, even for a little while, you had the former bass player for, well, he was bass player in a lot of bands, but in our band, the Maikai Gents, you had Steve Hill playing with you for a bit,
yeah,
which was
Steve
a lot
Hill,
of fun.
Who's like Steve Hill's like garage rock royalty, you know, like
he is.
If you care about that sort of thing, he's played in a lot of fun garage bands. You know, he was in the Finks and the Witch Doctors and all this stuff, you know, like underground LA, you know, garage. You know,
all the bands whose like shirts I wear, you know, the Finks, Boss Fink, you know,
the shirts that everybody goes, who?
Well, you know but, exactly. But I get to walk around the winery with the shirt that says Boss Fink and everybody knows, you know, who's in charge.
you like hanging around in LA bars with about 15 or 20 people, you know, listening to surf music, then that's the scene for you.
Awesome.
You know, we're going to reminisce just for another moment, because that night at the 30th, at my 30th birthday, where you guys were the featured entertainment, that also gave birth to, well, one phenomena for me in my life that kind of changed things for me, and that was the group that I still head up, and that's the Maikai Gents, our old-time Hawaiian band, sort of had our premiere that night. Long story about somebody not being able to make it, so said, okay, we need some Hawaiian music. This is a whole kind of luau thing. So a buddy of mine who's a guitar player, you know, learned some tunes. I sang some songs. My wife danced a little. She's a trained dancer. And we did these old-time Hawaiian songs, and it went over well. But it's our friends and families are supposed to like it. But the resort, you know, asked us back. And that just, that launched us on that curse. Like, oh, all of a sudden, we've got a band. And we've been playing ever since. So you were there for that as well. As the debut of nobody's favorite comedian, Shelley Krabs.
Oh yeah, the infamous Shelley Krabs,
who is still performing to this day, unfortunately, and just had a gig at the Napa Valley Opera House some months ago, performing with the Vineyard Home Companion. So it all goes back to that, and you were there, sir. So thank you for being a part of my life in many ways.
That's good times, man. That's a good scene. Is a very cool scene, and like. I mean, you know, you get together with, you know, just people that want to have fun, and it's all about drinking and wearing Hawaiian shirts and good times, man.
Yeah, it is. Now let's talk about you. Let's just get into the monster stuff. You know, how does one even get into this? I certainly was very interested in monster movies as a kid. I used to read Fangoria. I sent away once for somebody's How to Make Masks video on VHS and actually made one, and it was really fun. But, you know, even though I thought this would be a fun career, I had no idea how to actually turn it into a career. How did it come about for you?
Let's see. Let me see how I can condense this, because there's a lot to the story, but I'll condense it as much as I can. I grew up as a kid, you know, that was also just obsessed with monster movies. I watched Creature Features and all the old, you know, 60s Hammer films and Universal stuff from the 30s. And I watched all that stuff on TV when I was a kid. There used to be a syndicated program that was all over the U.S. called Creature Features.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And that was probably one of the very first things that exposed me to this stuff. Just watching it on late night TV, or sometimes it would run on Saturday morning and stuff like that. And in the 70s, you know, when I was a little kid. And then, like, that's just, like, something about seeing those movies and seeing the books at the library of like monster movie books and all that kind of stuff. And then I discovered this magazine called Famous Monsters of Filmland.
Oh yeah.
Way before Fangoria, you know, I'm talking about in the early 70s, you know, when I was a little kid, you know, probably 1973, 1974. And you know, I Famous Monsters was like my Bible. Like I was just obsessed with this magazine, and it was the editor, like you said, was Forrest J. Ackerman, you know, Uncle Forry, and he introduced the world to, you know, Halloween every month, you know, instead of once a year. You know, it was like you got to see monster movies in the pages of Famous Monsters, you know, and that just, you know, blew my mind. I loved it, and I drew monsters, and I was obsessed with Planet of the Apes and makeup, you know, the creature makeup that John Chambers did for Planet of the Apes and all that kind of stuff. And then flash forward to, you know, the 80s, you know, when I kind of was still, you know, probably the late 1980, let's say, at the pivotal point. You know, like a lot of effects movies started coming out, and then that was the dawn of Fangoria and all that kind of stuff, you know. And then, you know, I just was obsessed with those movies, the stuff that was coming out in the 80s, The Howling, American Werewolf in London, Altered States, Cat People, the John Carpenter's The Thing, The Fog, all these monster movies. And, like, I wasn't a slasher guy, you know, like, I liked movies that had monsters in them, you know, like,
Kelly's smiling at me because
I'm giving myself whiplash nodding. Yeah.
Because we talked about this on last week's show about the monster movies, the scary movies that we like. And we're definitely all on the same page here.
Yeah. And there's, you know, those slasher movies are fine, whatever. They serve their purpose. And, you know, it's like, but I was not like a slasher guy. Like, to me, the movie Halloween isn't the be-all, end-all, you know, of horror movies. To me, like, American Werewolf in London and The Howling and the John Carpenter's The Thing, like, those are the movies I worship, you know, like, I, you know, pray at the temple of those films, you know? And it's sort of like, that's what got me into what I do. So, I started making my own masks at home through just reading about guys like Rick Baker and Dick Smith and Rob Bottin, and I was just got insanely inspired at about the age of 15.
Did you have Dick Smith's book, the name of which is escaping me right now, but I had it at some point.
I think every kid that was into monsters had that book.
Dick Smith, yeah, of course, a famous makeup artist and special effects
monster,
guy.
Yeah. The Monster Makeup Handbook, which was put out by Famous Monsters originally.
Oh, what a great book.
Yeah, Dick Smith's Monster Makeup Handbook was like the primer for a lot of guys like me, you know, who wanted to know how to do monster makeup, and it showed very, very simple ways of doing makeup, the stuff you can, you know, virtually find in your mom's kitchen.
Stuff you can find at home.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really low tech, and it was it definitely was one of the main things that I saw. But there was also a magazine called Cinemagic, which had more advanced stuff for amateur Super 8 filmmakers and stuff like that, and they had a really great article on how to make masks by a guy named Kirk Brady. And I picked this up, and I was just like, that was like the key for me. Like, this is how you make a mask. Like, this is how you make a latex over the head rubber latex mask, you know? And it was, it opened my eyes to this world of, like, I could make monsters in, you know, my grandpa's tool shed in the back, you know? Like, I grew up in South Florida, you know, didn't have resources or any way to get the stuff, but I found, you know, places that sold plaster, I found places that sold latex, and so on and so forth, and just learned to make masks of my own, you know.
That's phenomenal that you took it to that level as a hobbyist. And before we go any further, I'm just going to read a few of your credits, only because we didn't really establish this, that I just said you're kind of a big deal guy, but you really are. I mean, going way back, Coming to America, that's not a monster film, but the makeup in there is incredible, with Eddie Murphy playing all the different characters and the different ages and whatnot. Gremlins 2, Men in Black 3, The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, one of the Star Trek movies. You have to remind me which one. But Hellboy. What's that?
No, Hellboy 1 and 2, yeah.
I mean, these are all big. Cabin in the Woods, which we talked about last week, From Dusk Till Dawn. Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah,
you've worked with directors like Guillermo del Toro, Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez. I mean, this is big stuff. So how does it happen from a kid in South Florida becoming, and literally a kid? I mean, you started as a professional at a very early age. How did you make that leap? I want to know.
Well, it didn't happen overnight. You know, I mean, I was determined to impress Rick Baker, who was my hero, you know?
All right, quick lesson. Okay, go ahead. Tell everyone who Rick Baker is. We talked about him last week, too, but one of my favorites as well.
Well, Rick Baker is you know, the guy, one of the main people responsible for the leap in special effects makeup in the 80s, you know? Like, I mean, he won the first Oscar for American Werewolf in London, but he went on to win 7 or 8 Oscars or something like that for all kinds of stuff. And Rick was like, you know, my mentor, you know, like he basically what went down was I wanted more than anything else to impress Rick. So at the time that American Werewolf in London was happening, they were doing all this press for it. So on a fluke, I saw one of these press, one of these things on PM Magazine, which was like just a local news program. It's like, tonight, Rick Baker, blah, 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 you know? And so I watched the show, and after I watched the show, there was a post office box number. So just completely on a fluke, I sent this letter to post office box number for the show addressed to Rick Baker, like, attention, could you forward to Rick Baker, you know? And I had photos of my masks that I had done at the time. I was 17 years old, you know? So I sent this picture, these pictures of my mask to Rick, and lo and behold, like, 2 weeks later, you know, I mean, it was forwarded to him. 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from Rick Baker to my home in South Florida, you know? I was kind of like, whoa, you know?
Yeah, what could have been going through your mind? Like, you're basically the guy that you idolize and have been wanting to impress is now calling you at your house.
Yeah, and Rick was very cool about that. He was very cool about encouraging, you know, younger people, because he had gone through the same thing himself with Dick Smith. Dick Smith, you know, encouraged him and you know, prodded him basically into getting into what he does. So I think Rick was definitely one of these cool, very cool people who was about great about passing it forward, you know, to the next generation, you know. And like, so he called me, and, you know, lo and behold, I'm, you know, sitting here at home at I'm 17 years old on a Saturday morning, you know, and like my mom picks up the phone and she's like, it's Rick Baker. And I'm like, what? You know, I was like, I thought it was a friend of mine, like joking around, you know?
Yeah. What was the conversation? Like,
yeah. So I picked up the phone and it was Rick, and Rick was like, hey, I got your pictures of your masks. And I just want to say your stuff's very cool. Keep up the great work. Here's the number to the shop. Write it down. You know, here's the address of the shop. If you want to, like, you know, send pictures of your stuff, send it directly here, and just keep in touch. And if you ever come out to L.A., you know, look me up, not look me up, but get call me up and say, hey, I'm coming to L.A., and you can take a tour of the shop. You know?
And by the time he was saying goodbye, you were already knocking at his door in Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly. Right? By the time I hung up the phone, I had already booked a flight out there.
Yeah.
No big surprise, you know. So, like, mm-hmm. I went and I met Rick. I took him one of my masks and stuff like that. So we had a correspondence for about, I would say, roughly about a year, you know. And in the interim, I worked on a low-budget horror movie in Florida called Scarecrows. And it was like a low budget, you know, straight to video thing, but kind of got a cult following and stuff and everything.
I haven't seen that, but I know of that movie. So
yeah, Scarecrows was like, you know, my first movie. I did it when I was like 19 years old, you know, and it was a low budget movie, but it was shot on 35, and it's actually, you know, pretty good. It has a cult following. The DP, Peter Deming, went on to shoot, you know, Evil Dead 2 and all the Sam Raimi stuff, you know, like. The movie looks really good, you know. So like, and it's a fun low budget '80s movie, you know. So I did that movie during that time, and then I was ready to move to LA. And then when I moved to LA, I gave Rick a call, and it just so happened he was like, I could use you on this job, and he gave me a job. You know, I landed on a Friday, you know, like, and he said, give me a call when you get here, you know, and I think I could have you start on something right away. And I was like super stoked. So I land on a Friday and I didn't know anybody in LA, you know, and a friend of my brother's who he went to high school with, you know, somebody I didn't really even know that well, was like living in LA, and it's like, hey, you can crash on my sofa, you know, or whatever. So I was like, cool. So this guy picks me up. So this guy named Alex goes, okay, take this shuttle from LAX to Hollywood Boulevard. And, you know, get off on Hollywood Boulevard and I'll pick you up there. And I'm like, what? You know, it felt like, you know, Guns N' Roses, welcome to the jungle.
Yeah,
you know?
I can only imagine.
I was like stepping off this bus, you know, like in August of 1985 onto Hollywood Boulevard, you know, and it was like, it was an experience. When I look back and I'm like 20 years old doing this, I actually even kind of surprised myself that I did that, you know.
It's gutsy, but it's obviously it's what you were born to do. Hey, Norman, hold on. We got to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and find out a little bit more about you and what it takes to create the monsters of moviedom.
All right, awesome. Sounds great.
You're listening to Judd's Napa Valley Show. We'll be right back after these messages.
And, of course, we're not really playing any messages at the moment. Norman, is this going okay for you? Are we like?
Oh, it's going. I'm having a blast, man. How about you guys?
Yeah, that's fun. I'm going to when we come back. I know Kelly probably has a million questions for you.
Yeah.
So I've let him ask a few as well. Basically, let's just talk about some of the kind of philosophy that you've got of making monsters. Since this is the Halloween show, we'll focus on the scary stuff, which I know you know inside and out. What it takes to create them, create effective ones, how you go about. I'm really curious about what the creative process is, like when you get an assignment or you're working on something.
Yeah, man.
And I'll pop in, but I know Kelly's a. He's our aficionado, Kelly, so man. Exactly.
I want to jam with Kelly, man.
Yeah, and we'll talk. I'm gonna kind of watch the time, but since we're recording ahead of time, we might have to cut some stuff for the actual on air, but everything else we can just keep for podcast, and there's no problem. So
yeah,
be fine. All right, shall we pick it up again?
Okay.
All right. Whenever you're ready, Lauren.
You're listening to 1440 KVON, the voice of Napa Valley. Now, back to Judd's Napa Valley Show.
Thank you, Lauren Mole. And we have on the phone from Hollywood, California, big deal special effects makeup guy, Norman Cabrera.
big deal, really big deal.
Yeah, he's a real big deal down there in Hollywood. And he really is. If you've been listening to the first part of the show, you've heard some of his credits. We can go over, well, you just listen to the first part of the show again. I'm not going to take time going over, but you're one of those guys. You're just in fact, Kelly, who is here, Kelly Doran, is helping me co-host this show as he's our local horror film aficionado. And he let me know that you and he actually, I think, had a brief meeting at Monster Palooza. You went and said hi over at Norman's booth, right?
Actually, I have never met Norman. I didn't meet him at Monster Palooza. I was at Monster Palooza.
Oh, my misunderstanding.
But it's kind of funny because you were talking about Rick Baker earlier, and I actually got the chance to meet Rick at Monster Palooza this year.
That's what I was thinking.
And I can't imagine what it was like calling him when you're like 17 or 18 like you did, because I mean I'm in my 40s and I saw him in the Monster Palooza museum, the gallery there, and it was all I could do to move my feet to like walk over and kind of go hi Mr. Baker, I'm a really big fan of yours. And he was the nicest guy. He was
great.
Yeah, I mean, he was checking out the displays and was like, "Oh, hi, how are you?" And you know, got a photo with him. And I was walking away, kind of like trembling, like one of the people that I've watched all of his movies, and I got to shake his hand. It was great. But
No, that's he's the man. I mean, he really is. I love
such
him
a nice guy.
He's like a father to me, you know, and he's my mentor, and he gave me my start in this business, and you know, I mean, what can I say? I can't say enough about Rick. He's amazing. You know,
let's talk about monsters. It's Halloween time. Kelly, I'm going to turn this over to you a little bit. I'll pop in from time to time, but this is really, as much as I love monster movies, I mean, you love monster movies.
Yes, I do.
And I know you've got a million questions. Why don't you take the wheel for a bit?
Well, I was looking over, you know, I know some of your work, but I went deep and was looking at some of your other stuff that you've done in your career, and I was like, oh, he did that. Oh my gosh, he did that. Like you did one of my favorite makeups in Rob Zombie's video for I'm Your Boogeyman.
Oh yeah.
You did the Rat Fink kind of weirdo looking characters. Those are amazing sculptures did.
Those were a lot of fun, man. Those were a lot of fun. And those are total tribute to Big Daddy Rob, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think it was like one of those videos, like with Rob's videos, they're so weird and abstract, like anything goes. It was like, you know, what do you want to make? And I was like, I want to make some Rat Fink monsters, you know? Like, he's like, okay, you know?
And he was probably perfect.
Some full cheese zombies, you know? Sure, okay, let's make those too, you know? So like, I think a lot of people love those Rat Fink guys, and something I always wanted to do, like as like living, breathing Rat Fink characters, because I'm like a massive fan of Big Daddy Roth, you know. So And it's hilarious because I think for a long time before people knew where those came from, I would see all these rumors online, like, and I would read them, but I would never comment. And this was back in the MySpace days, you know, like I would see people like, look at these things. They're from like some bizarre Russian movie, like from the 1930s or so, or, you know, like people would come up with these weird scenarios, like where this stuff came from. But I would just like, just grin and just read the comment and like not chime in at all, you know, cause I feel like,
you had the satisfaction awesome, that you'd made these things.
Yeah, like let the myth of that happen. But now you know, people know, you know, because Instagram and all these different things, you know, like people can find out about anything, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, I did those things and all the other stuff for, that was for White Zombies, I'm Your Boogeyman. I'm also the horror host in that, too. So if you watch the very beginning of the video,
it's a, isn't it Dr. Wolfenstein?
Dr. Spooky. I play Dr. That's right. Spooky. And then, what's funny is that people had theories about that too. Like they, some people was like, that's Tim or, Jim Carrey, you know, like, you know, like Jim Carrey, like really, like Rob would be able to afford Jim Carrey to play a horror host, you know, like, you know, it's just fucking funny as hell, you know, but.
Well, yeah, and you did, you also did creatures in. Well, you did. You worked on Harry and the Hendersons, which has a. It's. I love that movie because I'm totally into Bigfoot. The mythology of Bigfoot and Legend of Boggy Creek cracks me up. But you also did like for the Ramones. You did a pinhead costume for the Ramones.
Yeah.
You did. You. One of. The,
when you say, go ahead.
No, it's.
I say pinhead. Are you talking about like Schlitzy from Freaks?
It was in one of their videos. They had a costume.
The Ramones
that was,
pinhead, yeah.
Yeah, the Ramones pinhead costume.
That type, oh, okay.
Yeah, the Harry and the Hendersons was the first movie I worked on for Rick Baker. You know, I mean, that was my maiden voyage, so to speak, you know, for Rick. I mean, he had done a movie prior to that, which nobody had ever heard of, you know, called Rat Boy. You know, it fell into obscurity. It was actually produced by Clint Eastwood of all
people. Yeah, it was, wasn't it directed?
Sandra Locke.
It was directed by Sandra Locke.
Directed by Sandra Locke. And then, when I started work, the first couple of weeks that I worked for Rick, he was finishing up Rat Boy. And then he's like, you know, we're going to do this movie, which is Universal. It's produced by Steven Spielberg, and it's called Harry and the Hendersons, you know? And I was like, wow, this is going to be great. So, that was, my first big movie, and that was my first on-screen film credit too, you know, which is really cool, you know.
And it's kind of Rick Baker's wheelhouse because he got really famous with doing like apes and monkeys. He did stuff for
Greystoke
and Gorillas of the Mist.
I worked on Gorillas in the Mist with Rick Baker as well, and Rick's known as like the ape gorilla guy. I mean, that's one of his fortes. I mean, he could do everything, but like, he's like the master of you know, primates, and you know, so yeah, I mean, that was a lot of fun.
And wasn't the famous guy in the gorilla suit was Bob Burns though, right?
Yes.
And which gorilla are you talking about? Tracy the gorilla from Ghostbusters?
No, I'm just talking about in general the guy in the gorilla suit, Bob Burns.
Well, Bob Burns is like one of the Bob Burns was one of the gorilla suit actors from the 60s.
Anytime they needed a gorilla for like Gilligan's Island or something.
Well, that was actually somebody different, believe it or not. I mean, I know a lot about this stuff just because I'm obsessed with it too. When you see the ape in Gilligan's Island, it's not actually this guy named Janos Prochazka. You know,
and oh
Janos
my gosh, Prochazka, he knows the guy's name. I love this.
Janos Prochazka was also the ape in Bikini Beach, you know, the beach party movie, you know, with Frankie and Annette, you know, and Janos Prochazka was also the Mugatu in Star Trek, you know, so like probably the most famous gorilla actor or ape actor is probably Janos Prochazka, you know, like, and there's a few of them, you know, there's Charlie Gamora, but Bob Burns was also, you know, a very well known gorilla actor, primarily because he played Tracy the gorilla on the original Ghostbusters. There was a TV comedy show that was
Forrest Tucker and Larry Storch.
And Larry Storch, yeah, exactly. You know, and Bob is one of the one of the greatest people on earth. He's like the ultimate monster kid.
Well,
like,
I have not been. You probably have been to his house, but I hear it's like beyond the most amazing museum of movie or horror movie memorabilia you could ever hope to experience.
He has the greatest collection of anybody. I mean, he has the original King Kong armature, you know, the Willis O'Brien, you know, like armature. He owns that. You know, he owns Lily Munster's, you know, outfit from the Munsters. You know, he owns Time Machine. He owns, you know, Rick Baker's early masks. I mean, he owns the stuff from Aliens. You know, on and on and on. I mean, that guy has every cool thing that anybody could ever want. He's like the ultimate monster kid.
And he would always do, like, Halloween haunted house displays at his house. Like, he did one back when Alien came out that used, like, real parts of the set and costumes and had famously had like the shuttle from Alien like on the side of his house, and like they ended up like refabricating it, and they had like they found possum skeletons inside of it because it had been sitting there for so long.
Oh yeah,
only adds Bobby to the atmosphere.
He's great. He used to do these great Halloween things, and then he did one more recent, but most of those ones were done in the late 70s, early 80s. And Rick Baker, he'd get, you know, all these, like, you know, guys who were his friends, you know, to work on Halloween stuff and for his Halloween display, you know, in front of his house, you know, like, because he knew guys like Rick Baker and Jen Danforth and, you know, on and on and on, you know, like, you know, so, you know, but Bob's the greatest. He's such a great guy. I love him.
Cool. Glad to hear, because he's certainly a man of legend. When you are, when you get an assignment, you're working on a movie, how do you approach it? Like, how do you approach creating movie monsters? That's a big responsibility. These people who are into their monster movies are passionate, and you've got to satisfy them. The big thing about it is
when somebody asks me that question, you know, the first thing that pops into my head is that, you know, when you're a kid and you want to make monsters in your shed or garage or your bedroom or basement, you know, you're making it for yourself, you know, and when you're making it for yourself, you know, you could do whatever you want, you know, but when you're working on a film, you're working in the situation where it's like the pressure is on, you know, suddenly it goes from, you know, you're playing a guitar in your bedroom and then suddenly you're at Shea Stadium, you know, fronting Van Halen, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like, it is like that, you know, like you go from making monsters in your bedroom to suddenly making monsters for the movies, and the pressure is on, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's a different, it's a different level of pressure. It's a different level of creativity, and you're ultimately trying to satisfy the directors and the producers and you know, you have to follow the screenplay. So also, you know, you're really following what they want you to do, but you try to pump as much of your, you know, creativity into it, because that's what they hired you for. You know, they hired you to make their creature for them, you know? So like, it's that balance of like, I want to infuse as much of me into this as I can, but you're still ultimately making it for someone else, and you have to satisfy someone else. So it's that balance, you know, and there's times where I've worked on stuff where it was incredibly satisfying, you know, like working for Guillermo del Toro, for example, on both Hellboy movies. And on the second Hellboy movie, I did this, The Angel of Death, you know, that was on this actor, Doug Jones. And that was like just really,
it's a beautiful sculpture.
You know, it's creatively satisfying because Guillermo was like, I want you to think outside the box, like think of every Angel of Death you've seen in other movies and don't do anything like that. Don't do anything you've seen before. You know, do something creative. And he had his parameters, you know, he's like, I wanted to have two sets of wings and the wings got to be in the eyes. And he had like all these wacky ideas, and you have to filter all that stuff, you know, and then make it into a cohesive design, you know?
It sounds like fun.
But I love that kind of stuff. I mean, to me, that's like, I love that challenge, and I love the thinking outside the box, you know, approach to things, you know. So, you know, that's how you approach making monsters. You know, you want, hopefully, work on a movie, that they not only expect that from you, but they want you to do something that's really wild that no one's ever seen, you know?
Do you ever
that's the fun part of it.
Do you ever get as actually, no, I'm not going to go for the negative. I was going to ask something maybe that you didn't enjoy, but let's go the other way.
Well, there's always stuff there's always, just to answer your question, you know, not to avoid that question, there's always going to be stuff you don't enjoy doing. You know, it's not like every day you're like, wow, man, there are projects where you're like, Jesus Christ, I can't wait for this to be over. But that's like in any job, you know, like, I mean, you know, there's going to be the movies, a lot of times there's disappointments, like, for example, you do something that you think is really cool, and then maybe somehow it doesn't end up in the movie, or it's shot poorly, or, you know, there's a million different reasons why a particular project could not go well, you know? So, you know, it's not always wine and roses, you know, but when you do get really cool projects, like working for Guillermo, for example, or like Cabin in the Woods, for example, like doing the werewolf for that, you know, like stuff like that, you're just like, man, this is where all cylinders are firing on full potential here, you know.
There's probably things that have been in your sketchbooks and stuff that you've like, I have been waiting for somebody to hire me for this job.
Yeah, and then, you know, you also work with, and you also, there's a team, you know, it's never just me either, you know, like, it's not just, there's no single human being does any of this stuff, you know, it always requires a team, you know, like for me, my position on movies is always the lead artist, lead sculptor, or designer, or a combination of thereof, you know? But it's always a team effort, you know? Like, it's never like one guy did everything, you know? Like, you have, on Cabin in the Woods, for example, you have, like, there's a mechanical department, then there's a costume fabrication and seamstress department, there's a hair department, there's a foam latex department, there's a mold department, you know, like, and, you know, there might be 30 or 40 people working on one creature, you know? So, you know, it's always a team effort, and that's filmmaking. Filmmaking is a team effort, you know?
I have a question that I'm interested to know. Of all the movies that you haven't worked on, what movie monster would you have loved to have been able to get your hands onto?
That's really, really, really easy. I mean, I would have loved to have been on Rick's crew for American Werewolf in London. You know,
called like, it. I mean, Lauren, what did I write down right here? Werewolf. Yeah. Werewolves. He's mentioned werewolves about four times this show.
If you look at my Instagram, or you look at anything, or, you know, the stuff that I've done, I'm really totally obsessed with werewolves, and the things that, like, the two movies that inspired me more than any other movies were American Werewolf, which were the effects was headed up by Rick Baker, and the Howling, which the effects were headed up by Rob Bottin, and also with a lot of makeup also done by Greg Cannon, you know, and those either one of those movies, if I wasn't old enough to work on either one of them, because I was still like 15 or 16 when those movies came out, but those were the movies that inspired me, you know. So if I were to, say I could, the magic time machine where it would put me in a place, you know, it would probably be American Werewolf or The Howling, you know, probably American Werewolf, just because, Rick is my mentor, you know, so, but that or The Howling, or, you know, if I were to go further back than that, it would probably be the original Planet of the Apes and John Chambers stuff, you know, so.
Yeah, I think those were the first, I think that the Planet of the Apes were the first movie where I realized, wait a minute, somebody has to make these masks.
Yeah.
And they've got to put these on actors. I think they even did like a behind the scenes showing how they put the makeup on Roddy McDowall and the different characters.
Well, there's actually, it's funny you should mention that, because that was one of the very first things I ever saw as a kid on television. Now, I'll quick story. I was watching Beneath the Planet of the Apes on TV, and I was probably about 10 or 11 years old. And then it was on it was like a Friday night, you know, movie, blah, 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 you know, like Beneath the Planet of the Apes. And then the movie ended early, and they showed this little vignette, like a little 10-minute-long vignette of John Chambers. They're making up, and it's not Roddy McDowall. They're making up this, it was like a test makeup they did on this Asian guy. And it's beautiful. They show them doing the light cast and applying the pieces and all that stuff. And that's just completely completely blew my 10-year-old brain into like a gazillion pieces, you know? I was like, wow, this is what... And I would think probably if there was the very first seed that was planted in my brain was that moment right there when I saw, you know, I was 1974, you know, it's like my 10-year-old brain saw, you know, John Chambers making up a guy as an ape, you know? And I was like, and I was completely obsessed with Planet of the Apes. Like every sketchbook I had was Planet of the Apes.
That's the epiphany. That's great that you have that moment and you have the recollection of it. That's powerful stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was just like, that's it. This is what I'm going to do, you know? And then the 80s cemented it, you know? Mm-hmm. All the other stuff we talked about, you know?
The 80s, you mentioned The Howling with Rob Bottin. Of course, he did The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually worked himself into exhaustion doing The Thing. He had to like be hospitalized after because he was working so intensely.
Oh man!
On these, well, and they had refrigerated studios. Because it takes place in the Arctic, and going back and forth between like it was in the middle of summer, so they were in like basically refrigerated warehouses, and he had to go in and out of these studios, and I think he got like pneumonia.
Oh jeez!
And was working through that, so. He just collapsed eventually, but it's brilliant work.
Oh, that stuff is so incredibly inspiring. The Thing was also another one that was a massive game changer for me.
Now, another movie I didn't bring up the other day when I was talking with Jed about horror films, but the British movie Attack the Block has some of the most bizarre-looking, creepy aliens that came out recently, and you worked on that one too, didn't you?
Yeah, I worked on that one. That was done over at Spectral Motion. Spectral Motion is one of the companies that I've done a lot of stuff for, and I'm actually working right now on a film for Spectral. And Mike Alzaldi's great guy, you know, he runs that company, and he's like, you know, started his business on Hellboy, and that was the first movie I worked on with him on that. But prior to that, I had worked with Mike on other stuff as well, in various shops and things. But you know, his shop is fantastic, and they helmed Attack the Block. I sculpted a few creatures for that, I love when people see these movies. You know, it's like, you know, people are like, oh, I love Attack the Block, or I love Hellboy, or I love, you know, this stuff. Like, it is a good feeling to know that you're making something that people have a positive response to. You know, like, I love that. You know, I'm lucky because I get to make art for a living, you know, and it's still technically commercial art, and it's still technically, you know, a job with an intense level of responsibility. But when all is said and done, you know, I go to work every day and I sculpt something, or I paint something, or I design something, or, you know, whatever it is. And you know, to me, that's great. I feel really lucky that I've been able to do that now since 1984, you know. So I'm 34 years doing this stuff, you know, so that makes me very happy, you know.
What other stuff are you working on now?
Well, I can't, you know, unfortunately, the way the movie business is, you can't talk about your current project.
Right.
You sign the non-disclosure agreement, but I'm doing a project with Spectral Motion, which is very cool, and people are going to be very excited about it because I'm excited about it. It's something that I really like, and it's art that I really, really like. It's based on art that I really like, but that's about all I can say because, you know, I signed an NDA and then I'm going to get $1 million lawsuit for telling you guys.
Well, we don't want that.
No, you'll keep us in the loop when it comes time. Hey, Lauren is sitting over here, and I'm just curious. We haven't tossed anything over to you. How about you? Are you a horror movie, monster movie kind of guy? We've never really talked about our tastes in movies.
Actually, I'm not.
You're not. Okay. I was about to ask if you have a favorite movie monster.
He was reading a magazine while we were talking.
Actually, he just stepped back in because we're towards the end of the show. He hasn't even been here. No, I'm kidding. He's been sitting here the whole time. Are there any like monsters that you dig or any of the characters? Not really.
No. Any sci-fi movies that you like?
Well, I love the original Superman movie with the late Christopher Reeve and the late Margot Kidder. God bless them both.
Yeah,
two legends we've lost.
I love those movies too.
Yeah,
that's genius stuff.
That is good. Okay, well now I kind of have an idea. You know, we've never really talked movies. I don't think, have we?
I think still the Christopher Reeve Superman. I still think is the best superhero movie that's ever been made. you know.
Oh yeah.
I mean that honestly. I don't think that that movie was. I think was pitch perfect, and like you know, nothing. All the crazy visual effects and. I still don't think that the original Superman was touched. Has been touched, you know.
It was an optimistic film. It wasn't like, you know, they're trying to make like Superman to be kind of gritty and, you know, the character's not really a gritty character. He's the best of Superman. He's the best of everything, you know, and he's, I don't know. I'm a comic book fan too, so I have my issues with.
I love superhero movies. I grew up, you know, reading comics too, and I would love to get a crack at doing the Green Goblin. You know, like for me, that's my favorite. Comic book character. You know, and it's a Halloween character.
Oh, for sure.
I would love to get a crack at doing the Green Goblin. You know, hopefully one day they'll do a Green Goblin that actually looks like the Green Goblin. You know, like they still haven't done it. You know,
speaking of special effects, I've seen proof of concept version of special effects makeup where it wasn't, because in the Tobey Maguire version, it was basically a metallic mask that he wore, but they also were toying around with one that was actually a face appliance that you could show emotion and everything. And it looked amazing. And every time I've seen that clip of them doing the proof of concept for it, I was like, why didn't they use that?
Awesome. I know. It was amazing. I mean, that was beautiful. That was done by a company called ADI, Amalgamated Dynamics, you know, and like those guys, as a matter of fact, coincidentally, two nights ago, they had their 30-year anniversary. I went to their 30-year anniversary party at the Hollywood Museum at the Max Factor building on Hollywood Boulevard. Nice. But those guys are great. Tom and Alec from ADI are super cool guys. And they did that test makeup, which I thought was brilliant. I mean, it really is fantastic. And I still think it would be great to do the Green Goblin done as the Green Goblin, as what he looked like in the comic books. Like, the way he was drawn by John Romita and Gil Kane, you know, and stuff. And it's like, you know, I would love to get a crack at that.
All right, well, you've got Hollywood's ear now that you're on this show, so there you go.
Hey, nobody's listening to me.
Hey, Norman. I have good news for people who are into this and would like to learn how to do it themselves. You teach an online course through the famous Stan Winston School. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I did this like a mask sculpting class, which is done in three parts. And Matt Winston, who's Stan Winston's son, is someone I've known for a while, and he was like, I'd love for you to do a sculpting class, you know, and I was like, well, let me do a sculpting class to show people my technique for, you know, sculpting makeups and masks and so on and so forth. So I did this three-part thing that you can get at the Stan Winston School online. They do sell hard copies of it, so it was a thing that I did as a one-shot thing, you know, and it was a blast doing it. It was an online live sculpting class, which was offered as a streaming thing, and then they also made it available as a hard copy that you can either download or you can get an actual physical Blu-ray or DVD of it as well, you know. So if you go to the Stan Winston School online, look it up there, and it basically shows you how I make a monster. So I had a blast doing it. It was a lot of fun, and I think I got a great reaction from it. People told me they learned a lot from it, so pretty stoked that people got a lot out of it. You know, I like teaching in that respect. You know, I like kind of passing it forward.
Yeah,
that sort of thing. You know,
wonderful. And just to give the link or the address, it's stanwinstonschool.com, and Norman's there teaching.
I've always liked that. It seems like the special effects makeup industry is really welcoming to the next generation. You know, they. That's how they got into it, and they know that there's people out there that are into this stuff too. And it's nice that, you know, like, you know, people are willing to pass on their knowledge and kind of teach the next generation.
I think that's part of it. I mean, I feel like I got I got a tremendous amount of goodwill from guys like Rick Baker and Dick Smith. I mean, I wrote a letter to Dick Smith when I was a kid as well, and he responded to my letter. You know, like, I feel like, you know, sure, if people want to learn this stuff, and why not show them how to do it? You know, like, I think that's it's a great thing, and people are doing something artistic and something with their hands, and something that's like, you know, it's fun. And even if you're just going to do it for a cosplay thing, you don't want to get into movies, but you want to, you know, go to a convention, you know, and blow everybody away with your cosplay outfit, you know, like, that's cool too, you know. So you have, there's a lot of different outlets for that sort of thing, you know?
Sure.
So,
and I'm glad, Kelly, you brought that up, because I have the next generation in my household, and I've even sent Norman a little note that coming up sometime in the next few months, I'm going to be giving him a ring. And I've got my older child is extremely interested in special effects makeup and has already been working with a nose putty and shaping, you know, changing the look of her face and applying makeup and nothing gory or gruesome, but wow, she can really do a few things, and it's
that's
pretty fun.
Cool.
And she is like dead set at this point on that's what she wants to do. So we'll be giving you a ring at some point when we're in Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, definitely swing by, man. You know, yeah. I mean, that you know, everyone starts somewhere. You know, you start right. as a fan, and you get into this stuff, and you know, pick up some clay and sculpt a mask. You know, and it's great that you have. She has a dad like you who is encouraging, you know.
Oh, I love
that's
it.
That's really important, you know. Like, you know, I say follow your dreams, man. You know, that's what you got to do. You got to do what you want to do. You know?
Absolutely true. And you are a great example of having done that and doing it quite successfully, which is a pretty high note to end on, because looking at the clock, I could keep talking for hours. I love this stuff. And with your enthusiasm, I would love to keep the conversation going, but we're out of time, my friends.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. It's nuts, well, but it's been really a great conversation. Love finding out a little bit more about you and your history. Even though I've known you a long time, a lot of this stuff was news to me today, and hearing about making monsters is just, there's not a whole lot cooler than that to me. I think that's amazing.
Oh, that's great. Cool, man. Well, yeah. I had a blast, man. This was a great time. I mean, I really appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, do you have anything you want to, like, plug, like an Instagram page or website?
I mean, I have, if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's Norman Cabrera Monsters at Instagram. You know, Norman Cabrera Monsters with lowercase hashtags underneath. But yeah, I'm easy to find online, you know, and my Instagram is all stuff, usually that older stuff I've worked on and some newer stuff, and I keep it all about work, you know, and stuff like that, and I keep it all about making monsters, you know. So if you want to follow me, that's where I'm at, man.
Well, right on.
Send me a message through there.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Norman, and thank you, Kelly, and as always,
thanks.
Lauren Mole, thank you. This is it's been another fun show.
Awesome.
It was great.
Yeah.
This is Lauren Mole speaking for Judd's Napa Valley Show, a Gil Amar production.
And that's it, my friends.
Cool, man. Hey, thanks. That was fun.
That was fun. Thanks for taking the time. I hope it was cool for you. We'll get that cut, and it should air, I guess, what did I say, a week from Tuesday. That would
right.
be the 16th.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let me know, any pertinent links and all that kind of
stuff.
Yeah,
for
sure. I'll put it on my Instagram and all that
Super.
Kind of stuff, you know, and I'll plug it for sure. You know, I always do that. So
I appreciate you know? That too. Thank you. And then the podcast, like, again, I'm kind of estimating the time. I think we got this all good for radio. Probably won't have to cut too much, if anything, but the podcast will have everything. Is there, for the extra content, is there, like, do you want to have a Ghastly Ones tune? Do you want to have a Boss Fink tune? What do you want to put on there?
I don't know. You know, I mean, if you want, you know, if you want to use any of that stuff, like as an intro or an outro, you know, just use it. Why not? You know, it's like,
I was hoping actually while I got you on here, you would just kind of play DJ for a sec, you know, hey, this is Norman Cabrera and here's my band, whichever one, you know, and we can just, play the track.
Yeah, I don't, you know, to be honest, I don't know if I want to do that.
You don't want to do that. All right.
I feel really weird plugging. You guys feel like, I mean, if you have my full endorsement to play, you know, I don't want to be like, hey, listen to me. You know, it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, you already listened to me for an hour.
All right, I'll do it for you.
Yeah, do it for me. That, I think it's cooler if you guys, hey, if you want to listen to some, here's some of Norman's music that he does when he's not making monsters or some shit. Then, you know, blam, you know, throw it on, you know, so.
All right, we'll do that. We'll do that, man.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks very again. Cool, really, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Excellent, dude. That was a lot of fun. I see a good time. So like I said, send me the links and all that kind of stuff, and I'll plug it, you know.
Great. Sure appreciate it.
Awesome. Great talking to you guys.
All right,
it's great meeting you.
Have a great rest of the evening.
Over the air.
Bye now.
All right, brother. Talk to you later.
All right, bye. All right, let's stay recording. Oh, yeah. Bob, I'm gonna do an intro for Norman's band. I'm going to do two of them because I don't know which band I'm going to play. So we'll figure that out. But here, Lauren, I think we already have you saying, and now some extra podcast content, but just in case, why don't you do that right now?
Sure. And now, some extra Judd's Napa Valley Show podcast content.
That's right. We just heard from Norman Cabrera, big-time Hollywood special effects makeup guy. And here is his band, The Ghastly Ones. And you can hear Norman on the drums.
And now, some extra Judd's Napa Valley Show podcast content.
Thank you, Lauren Mole. We just heard Norman Cabrera, Mr. Big Time Hollywood special effects makeup guy. And now we're going to hear a track from his band, Boss Fink. Love that name. And Norman can be heard on lead guitar. All right. Now let's do let's do our intros. We got to do three of these.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. You guys got another 10 minutes or so?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. All right, should we do the one let's do the one we just did, sure. And then Bob will give you intros for show one and show two from last week. Excuse me. Okay, we've never mind. I just a frog jumped right out of my throat. Good thing we're not live. Fun show today as we talk about monsters in the movies and how they're made, how we can appreciate them, on and on. Our guest will be Norman Cabrera. He is a renowned special effects monster maker, makeup guy. Phenomenal, fun dude. He'll be calling in all the way from Hollywood, California. And we have in studio back, we've elevated you for the day. Last week you were guest, now you're co-host. It's Kelly Doran, Napa's premier, I'm just going to call you Napa's premier horror movie aficionado. So I'm looking forward to having this show with you today and talking to Norman.
Hi, folks. How are you?
They're squeamish because it's going to get creepy. And before we get to the show, I bet Lauren Mole has a few things he'd like to say.
We invite you to join Judd at his family's winery at the south end of Silverado Trail. Judd's Hill Winery, located at 2332 Silverado Trail here in Napa Valley, California, USA. Visiting information is at judshill.com or by calling 707-255-2332.
That's right, Lauren. And sorry, Bob, if you can cut that. That's right, Lauren. And you can always go online to our website, judshill.com. And while you're there, you can not only get our visiting information, you can see some of our fun videos, you can check out the events we've got coming up, and you can put a little wine in your shopping cart, some of our very limited release wine. And what do you think? As valued listeners, Lauren, shall we give them a little something special?
Just type in coupon code JNVS, all lowercase letters, please, and you'll get 15% off your entire wine order. And if that's not enough, you can join the Judd's Hill Wine Club anytime, day or night.
That's it. And we guarantee a good time with all the fine wines, fun parties, invitations to cool events at the winery, out and about. It's just always a good time. That's all I'm saying. It's a good time. Sign up. It's the best one there is. Totally unbiased. Enough about that, though. as enthusiastic as I am about all of that, I'm also really enthusiastic about the subject matter of today's show, movie monsters, special effects, makeup. Let's get to it.
And now, enjoy the show.
All right. Now let's do last week's. Lauren, I am looking forward to this show. I'm a little bit tentative. It might get a little spooky. We are going to be talking horror movies with Napa Valley's premier horror movie aficionado. Hold on 1 second. Come on in. Will, you can come in. Oh.
No, I was just gonna, I just texted you that you can exit this. I'm gonna come back, or are you guys?
We're cutting an intro. It's gonna be probably not even 5 minutes and we're done.
No worries. I'm coming back. If you guys could just exit this door.
Mm-hmm.
Are you gonna be able to put that back together?
I will. I don't know. Is there a screwdriver?
I think he left.
Can hook it back so it'll work. If there's a screwdriver, I'll try screwing it in.
Okay. I'll come back later tonight too. Yeah. Just have to. We promised a friend that we were gonna have dinner with them at 8.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're out. All right. Thanks.
Sure. Well. All right. Let's see. Yeah.
Well, what do you think, Judd? Do you think we're going to have to start all over again?
Or I can just say, where did I leave it? At Napa Valley's premiere.
I think that was where you left it.
All right, we'll start again.
Yeah, sorry. That's the best thing to do this case.
Lauren, I am really looking forward to today's show. We are going to we're going to get a little creeped out. I'm excited, though. This is going to be fun. We're going to be talking horror movies. And in studio, we have local artist and Napa Valley horror movie aficionado, Kelly Doran, is here. Hi, Kelly.
Hello, everybody. Hello.
Greetings from the crypt. Yeah, well, that was good. That was good.
I do my best.
And calling in just a few minutes, all the way from Hollywood, California, is going to be Eyal Aloni, who is the content director. I hope I got that right. He's the program curator. He is, let's just put it this way, he puts together what you're going to see on Screambox.com, which is a horror movie streaming service. So we've got a couple of experts to talk about the subject, and it's going to be a blast. In the meantime, Lauren Mole, what do you have to say?
We invite you to join Judd and his family's winery at the south end of Silverado Trail. Judd's Hill Winery, located at 2332 Silverado Trail, here in Napa Valley, California, USA. Visiting information is at juddshill.com or by calling 707-255-2332.
Thank you. And while you are online getting that visiting information at juddshill.com, you can look around. We've got some really fun videos, some quirky stuff there. We have got events coming up. Always check out our events site. And, of course, we have wine. We are a winery. We don't make that much wine, so there's going to be a very limited amount of this and that, but we do make quite a variety. So take a look, put some in your shopping cart, and Lauren is going to give you even something, even a little perk, let's put it that way, for being a listener.
Just type in coupon code JNVS, all in lowercase letters, please, and you'll get 15% off your entire wine order. And if that's not enough, you can join the Judd's Hill Wine Club anytime, day or night.
That's right, and I certainly encourage you to do that. There's no cost to join. You get a chance to try all of our wines. You get special invitations to events at the winery. We do events outside the winery in different towns. We just guarantee a good time with fine wines. That's what it's all about. That being said, let's talk scary movies.
And now, enjoy the show.
And Bob, if it's okay with you, we can use that intro for both. I think it's fine. If you don't mind, if you want to mix it up, you can, I don't know, change the tone of our voices, slow it down to sound ghoulish or something like that. But we've got to get out of the studio. We've run out of time. So that is that. And thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Stop this recording. Bye, Bob.